Welcome to the War Games Orchard, a Warhammer Fantasy podcast. I say you can find out the servants of death by their mark. No man is born so unnatural that his body does not revolt at the foul pollution of undead blood. And by these marks you can tell them, by the fangs of the predator. For their thirst of blood is the thirst of a fanged fiend. From their porcelain white skin, cold to the touch and unnatural to the eye. From the glow of their eyes behind which lives the hunger. These are the marks of the blackest evil. These are the marks of the vampire. The audio you're about to hear is the second part of our vampire discussion. The voices are myself, Nathan Stone, Jesse Walker, and Scott McMillan. And in this episode, we cover vampires in 6th edition, 7th edition, and 8th edition. I hope you enjoy.
I'm actually, now that we have this conversation, I almost want to try 5th edition army books in 6th edition.
Oh, you madman. That would be fun.
When it comes down to it, I think you could be as fluffy as you want if you had a good core rule set, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Which we are going into 6th edition vampire counts, right?
That's right. Here. Yes. Yeah. So 6th edition was the great rebalancing of Warhammer Fantasy after Hero Hammer. And we'll start off, we'll go over the changes to the vampire's profile first, since those are quite dramatic. So the vampire lord, so we, in 6th edition, we keep our three vampires. We have our vampire lord, our count, and our thrall. 6th edition brought in the real differentiation between lords and heroes. Now you had hero choices and lord choices. Of course, you couldn't take a lord at under 2,000 points, so very limited in that way. But our vampire lord actually starts off quite similar to his 5th edition counterpart. So he starts off with movement 6 and weapon skill 8, which are the...
They're the same.
I believe the... Yeah, those are the same. His ballistic skill is unchanged at 6. But here is where it all goes a little south for the vampire, is his strength is 5 and his toughness is 5. So we lose 2 points of strength and we lose a point of toughness. Loses 1 point of initiative, goes from initiative 9 to initiative 8, so now so slow. Just, I don't know how you could use only initiative 8. That's ridiculous.
Ooh,
but
bonus,
he does
though,
gain
yeah.
an attack. Yeah, yeah, so he goes up to 5 base attacks, and he stays at leadership 10. So this guy, yeah, other than the strength and toughness nerf, he doesn't get appreciably worse than his 5th edition incarnation, which to me speaks that they wanted vampires to be amongst the most terrifying heroes and lords and kind of on foot man-sized models that you could meet on the table. And it helps them be the star of the show too, where they stayed so good, right? Uh-huh. This whole book just revolves around these vampires. For my money, I believe, like, my favorite of the undead books is the 4th edition one. This, I think, was the most they ever nailed the concept of vampire counts and their bloodlines. It was just, everything in it was, or it spoke so well to these different families, these different clans, and you could really, like the 5th edition book, you could really kind of make them your own thing. I think they translated it really, really well.
Yeah.
And it helps too that this is a early 6th edition book. So they actually didn't go very long between the 5th edition Vampire Counts and the 6th edition Vampire
That's
Counts.
That's true. It was, 2 years?
I believe it was 2 years, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is a quick turnaround, for sure. So a lot of their stuff just kind of got ported over with, you know, another look towards balancing.
And we should mention that looking at the Necromancers, Master Necromancer, the... Undead book, weapon skill 6, bow skill 6, strength 5, tough 4, wounds 3, initiative 5, 4 attacks, and you know, 6, we got 1 attack, weapon skill 3.
And this will continue on until up until 8th edition, you'll see a necromancer with the exact same profile, a master necromancer. It doesn't change.
And that's like all, kind of like foot kind of regular, and all sorcerers, I guess, at that point.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Jesse, because one of the things that you really saw as a change from 5th edition to 6th edition, the combat characters, you know, they lost a little bit. But in 5th edition, you could kit out a mage and have him be, he wasn't going to take on other characters, but, he could kill foot soldiers and he had a decent number of attacks. And like what you just described is a complete gutting of their stat profile. And you'd see that throughout most books of the time, where they decided that if you were a mage, you were not going to fight. You were not going to enjoy close combat. So, that's a really important
point. Totally true, because I've built a necromancer with, now this is in a later edition, but I could probably pull something off. It was like the Talon of Death and the Warrior Familiar with his Krell buddy next to him. and he took on, he stood up against a unit by himself with attacks for four turns.
All right. That's really good. Yeah.
It's more about why they did this change. They probably realized you're going to put your money into if you're going to put a money into a fighter, you're probably going to go full vampire kind of thing. And then they turned the necromancers and certain spellcasters into straight up utility. Except for Jesse, that's what's fun about what Jesse had mentioned. You can fool people, if you're playing, I liked playing with that. You don't know. You can't reveal all of your magic items right away, so you don't know. And then you go and fight this, oh, sweet, I'm going to go kill this necromancer, and then the warrior familiar is coming out at you, and it's really funny. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think the difference is that, in fifth, you expected some level of competency from casters in combat. And in sixth, you expected just the opposite. Like, I'm just going to roll over this guy. So if you can do what Jesse did, if you've got those tricks, right, you could do it. But for the most part, you didn't expect much from casters in combat, because their profile didn't give you a lot to work with. You had to kind of be really clever about it to make something that would work.
I actually missed the vampire count, because in sixth, you have the Lord and then the count in the Lord slot. So you want to save yourself 80 points?
Yeah.
Take the count, who's still badass.
Yeah, this is a good time to talk about the points changes there. So Vampire Lord comes in at 285. Vampire Count comes in at 205. And in the hero section, the Thrall starts off at 80 points. So you do have some options, which is nice. The Vampire Lord is a very expensive. Yeah, so with our three heroes here, we have the Vampire Lord is a level 2 wizard, just right off the cuff. So that's really nice. The Vampire Count is a level 1 wizard. And then, much like 5th edition, the Thrall just isn't.
This was my only complaint about this book was, it was because the whole idea is they gave you the feeling that, your army should be led by a vampire, or if it is, it's going to be the leader. Like, I would probably, unless you're using Krell or some crazy powerful necromancer like Nagash or something, there's no way my vampire is going to allow a necromancer to command. Mm-hmm. So if you're only playing, say you're playing 1500 point army, your necromancer has to be the general, unless you're using the Necrarch.
Right, yeah. So that would be a little limiting.
That kind of bugged me. I got over it. Everything else in the book is spot on, but I also looked at it as, it's cool that the vampire thrall's too young, and, there's lots of fluffing around why a vampire thrall couldn't lead an army. They'd be too impetuous and new, and not be able to sustain the magic like a trained necromancer.
I was just going to say, in any of the books that I've read, the Warhammer fiction that I've read, anytime there's some kind of vampire, usually there's kind of a thrall master relationship built in there, and a lot of times you see it. They seem to have a idea with. you know, the older vampires or vampires just gaining strength the longer they live kind of thing.
Exactly.
So they become more steeped in dark magic and they become, it just kind of, they naturally kind of grow more powerful the longer they survive. So I always did kind of like that as a
Me
fluff
too.
Thing where it wasn't so much as you have, you know, if you're a weaker blood or if you're, you know, it doesn't really matter like how many times a vampire, you know, how removed you are from those original vampires. If you live long enough, you will become powerful and you can, you know, you can do all of the things that they did. It's really just a matter of surviving. So,
which is kind of neat when you follow the lore, you know, the classic vampires, they never talk about magic in such a way, but you definitely notice this vampire's older. So they have these powers, you know, it's usually in every vampire lore that's been written, they get stronger as they get older.
Yeah.
And of course, knowing that and playing this type of game or a game like this where you're actually being able to commit to casting magic with dice and stuff and representing that, that's where it really is cool when you can break down vampire lord, vampire count, and thrall. I do like the idea that there is a thrall because that's where it connected to Mordheim, right?
Right. I forgot about that because it's like a vampire thrall that leads the Mordheim Warband, right?
And they're not casters either. Ah. So the necromancer could, now, if you're playing Mordheim enough, your vampire can level up and possibly become a spellcaster. That's really cool.
That would be really neat. Yeah.
I had quick story. I had a vampire finally become a spellcaster and then a sister. What are the Sigmarite sisters?
Yeah, Sigmarite sisters, I think. Yeah.
One of them whipped the head of my vampire off. So what we did in our games of Mordheim, we rolled on our injury tables immediately during combat. Usually it's done at the end of the game when it's over. But the reason why was because stuff started dying so much that it would change your game. Like if you knew that you're general or somebody had died, you would play in a different way at that time, because you like if my vampire dies in Mordheim, I don't get another one. It has to be the necromancer that takes over.
Oh, okay.
It's really Mordheim is not forgiving sometimes, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's a cool way to do it, man. Just do it right away. Yeah.
Do it right away, and so we found out like, and I was just. I think I spent 5 minutes in shock, you know,
just staring at the board, staring at the dice. Yeah.
Yeah. This thing. Oh, and that's where the Mordheim was a bit like, you know, role playing at its finest, where we would call out stuff sometimes like this archer's going to shoot you right in the leg or something. But that's what she did. She's like, I'm going to whip your head. The vampire right off.
Nice.
So I'm also noticing that necromancers, were alive as well.
Yes, right.
In early 5th edition, not anymore. Yeah, I also wanted to mention the characters that you can take in 5th that I know of, right? You know, Manfred, Isabella, Vlad, Nagash, Arcana Black, Kemler, Krell, Cetra,
yeah.
Yeah, in the 5th edition Vampire Counts book, most of the like the ones that are vampires all show up, as well as a couple extra ones like Wallach, and of course a lot of the, I think some of the like Cetera, of course, but some of them ended up in the Tomb Kings, although I think it was less than, because I don't think Arcan the Black ever made it to the Tomb Kings, did he?
No, he came back in 8th.
He only came back in end time stuff, right? Yeah.
Which was too bad.
good character.
I'm glad he came back.
I wish they had kept his chariot.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, me too, actually. I didn't like the monsters they were on.
No.
But when 5th edition came out, and we were talking about our favorite bloodlines, and the more I thought about it, it's definitely Blood Dragons when it comes down to it. It's that Aberhash story and that Wallach. But imagine me in 1999. And here I am still waiting for a Wallach model.
Oh.
2020, man. Yeah. Where's the Wallach? I mean, you can kit bash your own, of course, which is, you know, I did that for, I took the Red Duke and put bat wings on him or something crazy, just to
Just to make your own kind of,
you know, make my own kind of character. It was fun.
Yeah. That actually sounds like it should be a series of children's book where you, Wallach is hiding amongst like a horde of zombies and you have to pick them out.
Where's Wallach? That's wicked.
So all of the vampires that appear are in there. So Vlad, Isabella, Manafred, although it's a single profile Manafred. It's not the, the acolyte master. One. Neferata is there.
Neferata's 700 points, man.
Yeah, she's all of them are so expensive. Melchior, who was only ever in this one, I believe, because his protege, like Zacharias, shows up.
What is he? Is he a foot? Is he mounted?
He's mounted on a winged nightmare, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, right. That was a blood dragon, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, he's a Necrarch, actually.
Yeah, Necrarch. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Because then you had Zacharias in six. Yeah. Right.
So you. Oh, we also got Heinrich Kemmler,
and Krell,
we got Dieter Helsnitch. I can never say
Dieter Helsnitch.
Yeah, I forgot about him.
Honestly, if I was gonna have one of those old special character models, it might be him. I just I loved his Manticore. It was the whole thing was so, and I loved his the Doom Lord of Middenheim, like. It's just a great
I have
title.
That model, guys. I have that model.
Yeah, cool.
Hate it.
You know what? That makes sense because I love it because it's goofy and silly. So I feel like you would hate it for the same reason.
Trust me, I'd like it a lot more than I do now because of nostalgia reasons.
Oh, yeah.
It's nostalgia, right? Yeah.
I appreciate it, right?
The Revenge of the Doom Lord in the 5th edition book, you know, with Doug Hyde Helfnick, right? And all those, like, little mini campaign you could play.
Yeah.
Man, I remember those old skeleton boxes. Like, I really wanted that Undead Army box so bad for years, man.
Yeah.
Years. And I was just, like, badgering my poor dad, and he told me to give it up. Yeah, we digress a little bit.
We should.
Six books.
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about their bloodlines, because we get some we get some differences. And the first one being that in this book, as opposed to the 5th edition book, you actually get stat changes and abilities just from choosing what family, like before you buy any powers. So
really cool, yeah.
Which is really neat. Yeah. So the Von Karsteins, being the archetypical vampires, don't actually get any of these, but everyone else does. So the Necrarch get +1 to their total when trying to cast a spell, which is fantastic. Thralls can use arcane items. They have -2 to their weapon skill, and they cannot choose mundane weapons or armor there. So you do get some drawbacks with the benefits here. Blood dragons get +2 to their weapon skills. So, you know, just in case you needed that weapon skill 10 so badly for something.
Yeah. Fighting but chaos.
I think a much better rule is that lords and counts automatically wear full plate armor for a 4+ base armor save. Sounds so great to me.
Yeah.
But they do generate one less power dice. Not that you're taking a blood dragon for their magical abilities. And they generate dispel dice as normal, though, so that's nice.
Yep.
And the blood dragon with the highest leadership in a unit must always issue challenges and always accept challenges. So, all of these have positives and drawbacks, but they're very fluffy.
This is really well done, this part here.
Yeah, I loved it. I was reading through this, and I loved it. I fell in love with this book again, just doing the research for this episode. So... But then we come to the newcomers of 6th edition, and we got a new vampire family, and that was the Strigoi. And they actually have a really neat backstory. I really like the idea of this lost kingdom in the Badlands.
Yes.
And the wandering kind of Strigani people.
The first school king.
Yes, yeah. So they were very, very cool. I didn't like them much at the time, because I didn't really like their kind of bestial appearance, but the more I've read about them and just kind of like the tragedy of the Strigoi, I've really come to enjoy everything about them. I think they're super cool. But their abilities are lords and counts have +1 attack, so you're looking at 6 attack lords. Just brutal. And they have hatred and a 5+ ward save, which is Yeah, like just crazy.
That's bonkers. It's arguably the best bloodline in this book.
I think it is. Like I think someone decided that they needed to sell some of these new Strixhoi models, because that is, you know, if it was just, honestly, even if it was just the plus one attack, but plus one attack, hatred, and a 5+ ward for vampire lords. Tremendous. Thralls have kind of a weaker version. They get the plus one attack, they get the hatred, but they get the six up ward save instead. Like the Necrarch, they cannot take mundane weapons or armor. They do have one big drawback, that they cannot use any magic item. They must always fight on foot, and they cannot have a battle standard. You can't give the Thralls battle standard. You have a white or something.
White King.
Yeah.
So I just noticed that for some reason I missed the any magic item. I thought that was armor, because I had my head still in, was in 8th edition. That is actually, that's a big deal, not being able to take magic items.
It is. Yeah.
Bonus, right?
That stat bonus is nice.
And we haven't even got to the powers.
Yeah.
You can choose, which are insane.
Yeah. So then the last one, of course, is our friends from the Silver Pinnacle, and that is the Lamians. So the Lamians have plus 2 to their initiative. All models in base contact with one or more Lamian vampires suffer a minus 1 to their leadership, and cannot choose any mundane weapons or armor, and they have minus 1 to their weapon skill. For me, the Lamians got the short end of the bloodline powers for this one.
For me, not even so much right here, but when you look at the powers that they can choose from, that's where I find they don't work, because what ends up happening is a lot of their powers in this book are on any model that has immunopsychology, it doesn't work on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think Jesse and I found out like 4 out of 7 or 4 out of 6 of those powers wouldn't work against I was playing against his Tomb Kings.
Oh, okay.
So there was no reason for me to choose those powers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Three or so armies, 4 armies, wouldn't even be affected by any of your abilities. Yeah.
You know, it's good when you're playing, you know, oh, I'm going to fight Empire or High Elves, and you know. But if you're going to a tournament, you're probably not going to take the Lamian bloodline unless you know which, you know, you don't take those powers.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, minus 1 leadership is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's quite good in 6th edition when you're considering, you know, the battle standards only good for break tests.
Yeah, yeah. The leadership debuff seems like something of real quality. The initiative, I mean, vampires, what are you doing? Your leadership like 8 to begin with. The only thing that's beating you is probably, you know, things with always strike first. That's about it. I just
which was rare at that time.
It's honestly, it's kind of like the plus 2 weapon skill for the Blood Dragon, where I'm just like, you're already taking a stat that I don't need improved, and you're improving on it.
I would disagree with you on that, because the Blood Dragon, the stuff that you really need to survive, for example, if you put your weapon skill from 8 to 10, all of a sudden those weapon skill 4 models need to hit you on 5s instead of 4s.
Oh, you know what? That's a tremendous...
It's a big deal.
That's a tremendous deal, yeah.
You put them on a zombie dragon.
Yeah, you are correct.
6 is dead, yeah.
Oh, no.
It's crazy, yeah. It does come in play, right?
Yeah. So let's talk about a little bit about the powers. We won't go through all of them, but we'll just hit on some. If you like some, we'll call out here. So let's go through the Von Karstein ones. So the Von Karstein stuff, it's similar to the 5th edition, where you get the wolf form, summon wolves. It's got the same kind of feel to it, but there's less of the kind of transfix and beguile, like those kind of control powers in this one. But there's
still nothing yet.
Yeah, there's still kind of like the feel you get from this one is there's still like the kind of the leaders of the undead, right? So you have something like Walking Death that just adds plus 1 to their side's combat resolution as a bonus.
That's awesome. That's really
great.
Good.
Call wins for 55
Call wins
points.
Is so good.
Yeah, so I mean, situational depending on who you're facing, but my goodness. So for 55 points, you can summon a storm in your movement phase if you decide not to move. And on a 2-6, a wild storm kind of whips up. And the storm, the storm affects the entire battlefield.
It's so frigging amazing. So yeah, you guys are going to siege my castle with all your flyers? No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So what it does is all shooting is at a -1 to hit. Oh, all so flying good. Movement is impossible, and flying creatures have to use their ground movement value. What an absolutely wonderful power. Like, also... probably one of the most cinematic powers when you think about it. Nothing screams vampire more than standing at the like top of a parapet or on the tower of a castle and just calling this roiling black thunderhead to come and cloak the battle. And so cool. Really cool. I love it.
And of course, you got your bat swarms, your wolf, your summon wolves, your familiars, and your big leadership bubble. Like, because you are the head honcho.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that classic kind of Bram Stoker's kind of stuff.
Oh, know? Yeah, the darkness. Yeah. Both coming from out of the 90s as well.
So Von Karstein stuff I really, really like. Really cool. When we get into the Blood Dragon, things get familiar. This is very similar to what we saw in 5th edition. Starting off with stuff like Red Fury, where you just get a bonus attack. So if you want a 6 attack base vampire, you go for that. 6 attack, weapon skill 10 vampire. Blade Master, I think great for challenges. If you're one-on-one with something. 30 points. You choose a model and base contact with him at the beginning of the close combat phase. The chosen model loses one of his attacks, chosen by the vampire if he has different kinds of attacks too. So you can,
hello giant.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no. Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
So the heart piercing attack is back. So the reroll miss close combat attacks in the first round of every combat. So yeah, hatred. Really, really good stuff. There's a killing blow one, +1 strength on the turn he charges. So this guy can just put out the hurt with his powers. Also, his powers are very cheap compared to some of the other ones.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to mention about the Blood Dragon, though, an interesting, all of his powers only affect... him or a single enemy. Like you really get the sense that they wanted these guys were solely focused on themselves and what they were doing. They weren't really leaders as much as say the Von Karsteins, where they're really doing these big battlefield things. These guys are just all about their own personal combat prowess. And I like how that translated from the fluff to the rules for them.
Yeah,
for sure, man. It's hard not to love them. You know, look at like the armor that they don.
Armor.
In life, they'd probably keep the same armor they were wearing and just add things to it as they get older. If you're a high elf or something, you were turned into a blood dragon, or imagine being a sword master and you become a blood dragon.
Oh yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
Can elves become vampires?
I don't know, to be honest, in lore.
I can't think of any examples of it, but I also don't see why not. But now I just really want like a halfling and a dwarf vampire as well.
Yeah, of course you do.
And next in our bloodline discussion, Necrarch. Now, I only got a Necrarch model like a couple months ago, the first one I've ever got. So like I have never fielded them before.
They were the first vampires I fielded in this edition. Because I had, those models came out first. I had the one, there's a mounted version on a horse. You bought them in a blister. And then the identical foot version of that one. I really liked how they did that. You got the same. And of course, I did use them as separate, though, in the game. Yeah.
So let's look a little bit at their powers here. Necrahara's Noble Blood at 45 points, just you get one extra magic level. Sweet. And you can also use it to make a thrall into a level 1 wizard and then make them the army general. So you could do that where you're in a you wanted a vampire general in a game of less than 2,000 points, since you couldn't have either of your lords there.
Yeah.
So the Necrarchs, much like the Blood Dragons, were very focused, and where the Blood Dragons are focused, of course, on close combat, Necrarchs focused on the magic phase. So they had stuff like the Awakening that added to your totals of raised zombies and skeletons, which is always nice and thematic. Dark Acolyte, I think, is a steal for 25 points. The presence of the vampire on the battlefield adds one dice to the player's pile of power dice. But it doesn't affect dispel dice, but 25 points for a power dice, especially in 6th edition, where those were a lot harder to generate.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think their stuff was good, and it was fluffy. I don't find it quite as interesting as I find some of the other powers, but I feel like it's very functional.
This one is utility. To be honest, this is my favorite, even though the Blood Dragons are my favorite bloodline. My favorite bloodline in 6 is this one.
Nice.
I won my first tournament ever with this bloodline. Man, that was a crazy tournament because I found out how to use for the first time, just my friend and I were practicing, the outnumber fear causing in 6th edition. And I used that to my maximum potential. It's kind of the first time I took a list that was more about winning, I guess, like effectiveness, instead of being like, oh, I'm just going to throw this and that and that. So I had two big units of zombies, one unit of skeletons, the black coach, vampires, black knights, and probably some fast moving bats or something. So what I did was, though, I just put the necromancer and necrarch right in the middle. So we just, every time they cast, there'd be so much undead corpses reanimating and stuff. And then slam them into, the last game was against the Empire, and I just slammed them into Empire troops, and they couldn't, with the vampire in there plus the rank bonus, blah blah blah, outnumber fear causing, I just broke them. I think I won on the third turn or something.
Wow.
The black coach absorbed 25 wounds that game. Oh. I remember. Yeah.
It would have just been flying around at the end.
The tournament organizer kept like walking by tables, and when he came by our table, he would yell out loud, "Black coach. Black coach." It was so funny. It was just like, he's like, how many wounds now? It's like, oh, it's up to 15. And it was the most I ever absorbed. And it was all like, the best part, it was all like from a fluffy battle against men of the Empire.
Right.
What a time. Yeah. I'll
never That's awesome. That. That's yeah. so cool.
And so you were putting the Necrarch in like the front line of combat?
Oh, dude. He was also a fighter. Like, there's no negative, like, you know how that says Lamians get -1 to their weapon skill? What does he get? -2, was it?
He gets -2, yeah.
-2. So you're looking at...
Weapon skill 6.
Weapon skill 6.
Yeah.
So fighting against men, the worst I'm going to hit on are 4s against a character. Mm-hmm. So, and I usually just slashed into regular guys if I could.
Right.
And you're not... The Blood Dragons are a bit more unreliable, where they can be sucked into a challenge.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a tactic, right?
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
But just like consistent casting.
Yeah, and that is worth a lot.
Nice. And then magic items on top of that.
And then the magic items on top of that. And then it's 100% utility. There's no like, I really did want to like the Limian ones more because they're really fluffy, and we'll get to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. Going on to the Strigoi, mm-hmm. this is... There's one, Nathan, you read them down, and I'm going to stop at the craziest one.
Okay. All right. So this Strigoi have a lot of, they're tough. So the very first one is Curse of the Revenant. 55 points gets you regeneration. So this is already on a toughness 5 model that has a 5 up ward save. So you can't take armor on these guys, but honestly, do you really need to with tough 5 up ward? And especially if you go with Massive Monstrosity, which is our next one. The vampire
that's
has
the one
plus one wound
about.
On his profile.
Imagine being able to combine the top two. That's why they put Curse.
That's why they made it 5. Points. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Such a big
so,
deal.
And this is where regen happens at the end of a combat phase.
Yeah, exactly. So unless your opponent has fire, you know. Regen, it's going to get us in. Oh, I always wanted to combine that one wound on it though.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure everyone did, which is why it was 5 points more than you could spend on powers to do both of those.
Yeah.
Anyways, bats.
Bat form's awesome.
Yeah, bat form. So he stole that from the Von Karsteins, but it gives him the fly special rule for 45 points. Could definitely be useful, especially I'm thinking, you know, late game chasing something down on his own instead of, you know, out of his unit or something. Or I'm even just a thrall for maybe war machine hunting.
Oh, for sure. That's exactly a great... there's a combo I'll talk about later.
So going down the list here, Infinite Hatred. So it upgrades his hatred. He can just reroll all failed to hit rolls for 30 points. Also sounds great to me. He summons ghouls, and Iron Sinews is the last one. Gives him plus one strength. So if you want a nice strength six vampire lord, that is another way to get one. So the Strigoi, very much similar in a way to the Blood Dragon, in that they both kind of specialize in close combat. However, the Strigoi is all about buffing its stats, its resiliency, and its raw strength, as opposed to the more kind of finesse and duelist aspect of the Blood Dragon. So interesting differences there. And last and maybe least, the Lamians. So we start off here with Seduction, and so the Lamians kind of have the most, I want to say, kind of in-depth rules. Like they're more situational, and they're more, you get kind of a wall of text here. But basically, you're forcing someone in close combat with you to take a leadership test. If the test is failed, that model is controlled by the vampire player in that combat. So really cool, really fluffy. The issue is you have to rely on that failed leadership test. And I know their thing is they do debuff leadership. They debuff leadership by one though.
Yeah.
So it's a 55 point power. If it was maybe a 25 or a 35, I can see that, but 55 points is a lot for something that may not come up at any point, or it may come up and not be useful, right? Like you may only get to use this on a unit champion, and sure, that's, you know, it's a couple of attacks that your opponent doesn't get and that you do get, but again, 55 points is just a lot to pay for this, I think.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really got to put yourself sort of in harm's way to get into contact with those choice targets.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I when I first read this, I was, you know, I think your vision is like using this on a chaos exalted hero or something, and then you look and you're like, oh well, that's a leadership 9 model, so, and if it doesn't work, they're probably going to hit you real hard. So it's one of those ones where the risk I don't think equals the reward in most situations, but I love the idea of it. I just think it could have been done differently there. So the next one is Domination, which is kind of Seduction light. So this is another leadership test. If the test is failed, the victim cannot attack in that close combat phase, and all attacks directed against the victim will hit automatically. So this one's 40 points. So it's a bit of a discount over Seduction. Same problems though, honestly. Mm-hmm. I like it a little bit better because it's cheaper, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just finished almost finished the Coven Throne there tonight. Oh man, I kind of want to play some Lamia.
Yeah, and that's a great example. I was going to talk about that because if you take all of this, the complaints we have about six Lamian powers, they put all really great powers on that entire Coven Throne, so you get to. That's a really well-crafted rule set where the entire thing is all Lamian fluff. You know what I mean? Like, minus this, you can do that and put the Lamian on the throne and give her a bunch of buffs. And that's, when we get to it, you'll see that 8th doesn't have the hindrances that they did here. Again, they were worried about balance, so I understand.
Yeah, and this set of powers probably was always going to be the hardest to balance because it was something that was, it's almost you know, it's almost kind of soft power as opposed to the raw, hard, like, you know, just killiness of something like a Blood Dragon or a Strigoi, right? They wanted it to be a little bit more finesse here. And I think they were on the right track. I think they just maybe were a little afraid of overdoing it, so they underdid it a little. But moving on here, one really good one.
I just wanted to mention that they could take the Lapian bow, the ass bow, and you could like look single people out and can't take lookout sir roles.
Oh, sniper. Yeah.
That's nice. Yeah. That's really nice.
That's really worth the taking. Remember I was talking about sniping out a unit champion so you don't have to worry about challenges.
Mm-hmm.
That's really huge on that, the bow there. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you definitely
early sniper.
Yeah, bringing out your white kings, white lords there to do your heavy lifting and then get in there and fly out a bunch of attacks and friggin' make them take yet another leadership test. They're gonna fail.
They're gonna fail eventually. So before we get off Lamians, I just want to talk about a couple more of their powers because these are the two that I actually think are really good. Quick Blood, which is a 5-up ward save.
Yep.
Now, arguably, you could probably do this with magic powers or with magic items and save your power allotment or bloodline power allotment. But if you don't want to do that, it's a nice option. Innocence Lost, I think, is probably their best one for 25 points. The vampire always attacks first in close combat, so always strikes first, even if charged. And it is basically just always strikes first. There.
Always strikes first, yeah. But they cancel the charge, which is different.
That's true. That's true. It's a little bit better.
Also, in six, don't forget that the powers and magic items are bought together. They're not separate.
Oh, right. Yes, thank you for reminding me.
No worries.
So,
The Lamian special list at the end of the book, where they can take any hero from any army.
I love that. We'll actually talk a little bit about those theme lists before we move to seven.
Sure. Yeah.
It's because those are so good. Yeah. So one thing to keep in mind here with the Lamians, you were really banking on leadership tests if you were going to take their powers, because four of the six powers in their books require an enemy model to take a leadership test. Like both Transfix ended up with the Lamians, and it works actually basically the same as it always has there. So it just stops someone from attacking in close combat. And then their last point, one is Beguile. And so it was so weird that, you had four of these six powers based on leadership. And then there was a kind of a big footnote at the bottom here. That basically
models
tells
you. Immune to psychology, frenzied, unbreakable, etc. are immune to these powers. At the same time, I have a feeling when they were writing these rules, they literally thought they were the best.
they must
have. That's
how
I feel. Yeah, I feel like the person writing these, I think it was Alessio Cavatore, but I'm not sure.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like, I can see him being like, oh, this is incredible. Look at all the stuff they can do with leadership. And then, it's so situational.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I would really fear? I would fear this with my ogres. Nothing really comes into effect here. And with their base leadership, like even their heroes, leadership 8, you're testing on 7s there. And ogre heroes being so powerful, if that goes wrong, my goodness, I think, and it's funny because of course ogres didn't exist in 6 as an army, but it's one of those things that I'm just thinking about my own armies. And I'm just like, I wouldn't want to face that. That's about the one thing that scares me here. That is kind of an overview of vampires and their bloodline powers in 6th edition. 6th edition, really, really fun, really fluffy stuff. And Jesse just mentioned at the back of the book, and my God, why wasn't this in every book, in every edition? They had special army lists, and it just changed up some of the army requirements, and you had some special units and things for each of the families. So you got one for each one. I, going and reading this before the episode, have honestly, I've fallen in love with the idea of a Von Karstein 6th edition army with Sylvanian Levy. Right. That would be so cool. You do them up in like the Sylvanian color scheme from the Heraldry of the Empire book, but you have them supporting, you know, units of skeletons and zombies. You tie it all in with a Von Karstein van. Oh, I can't get over it. It sounds so cool. I really want it. But is there any of those? Did you guys ever run any of these special forces, and did you have a favorite in them?
I think I did Nekrark once. Yeah, I did, because I had the models for it.
I built a Blood Dragon list. I didn't. The game was postponed, so I haven't been able to use it.
Dope.
It would have been brutal.
Yeah,
It was going to be the Strigoi list versus the Blood Dragon list.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I mean,
so the Blood Dragon list is cool because you're looking at a core of Black Knights and Graveguard.
Yeah.
Also, skeleton bowmen. I missed that when I was going through it earlier. Skeletons equipped with hand weapons and bow, 10 points per model. That's a lot to pay for skeletons, but you know, you get some bowmen. Yeah. That's kind of cool.
You're not going
to
panic those suckers.
And you do it using the Bretonian knights, you know, because it's all Bretonia. Yeah, it's super cool.
Oh yeah, yeah, I see that. Oh, and they still fight in the lance.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah yeah.
Yeah, see, I missed those when I was just kind of skimming these.
Vampire Lord at the head of a lance, a Blood Dragon, of Black Knights.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. Yeah, that would hit like a truck as well.
Oh, man.
Mine was
the heroes could all ride nightmares, and I had three models up for it. I bought a Ral Partha one years ago, just to add in there. So vampire thralls and lower what wraiths and whites and necromancers could all ride winged nightmares.
Oh, that's really cool. That would make a really interesting kind of list there. One of the better ones, or not better, I should say, from a rules point of view, but I think one of the really fluffy things is the what you had mentioned, Jesse, the Lamians and their ability. So they can take heroes from any other Warhammer Armies book as swains. So basically heroes that have fallen under the sway of a Lamian vampire. And I really love that idea. I think you just do some incredibly cool stuff with that. You get the obvious choice would be like a Bretonian or Empire Lord or something, but you could even do some weird stuff with that if you wanted to.
Get a high elf.
I would love to try that. Yeah, I mean, I would be willing, if you're into Lamians, Jesse, I'd be loving to try the Blood Dragon Lance formation.
Right. Yeah, I could.
That'd be so fun.
I could bring a Dark Elf or a Chaos Lord or something.
Well, you already have a theme going with that Dark Elf banner guy, though.
I was also wondering, right, so I was just looking for the mount options here. So you've got the Winged Nightmare, which is a horse with wings, or is it the big 40 mil, 50 mil monster?
It's a 40 mil, maybe even 50.
Yeah, one of those two. It was an interesting model because it doesn't really look like anything in particular. Like, it's a big winged kind of Frankenstein creature.
Yes.
I was never a fan of it, really.
I didn't like it either, and it didn't play well on the game either. It just died all the time. Doesn't have any saves.
Those mid-level mounts that don't have like the toughness of a dragon or something similar, or don't have like the scaly skin save, they always just got shot out from under you, in my experience. And I feel like the nightmare would be similar.
The only one I like is the Beastmaster on Manticore, because reason being, you pay 40 points for the rider. It's so cheap.
Also, you know you're using Dieter, and I mean, that's just winning. You've already won at that point. quite frankly. I just love that model so much.
Oh my gosh. You guys have no idea. In my opinion, I did a very good job on the Manticore in 1999, whenever I bought it, or even earlier. I did the traditional like yellow, red mane, black wings. But Dieter trying to put the model, like his lower torso is just legs and cloak all in one, like this giant and this bone, weird bone thing sticking all the way up his back like a banner.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have to glue his torso on top of it. And it just, the wide legs stance to get on the Manticore was like, you know, in reality, it's like trying to ride a hippo, you know?
Right. Like he's super splayed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
funny.
Yeah. One thing I miss from 5th to 6th is the loss of the Lich in with the vampires. You know, yep. The Lich goes to the Tomb Kings or whatever, I yep. guess.
Yeah.
Yep.
But like I had like a Lich horse, like the Lich with the crown, with the yep. staff, and I couldn't use him anymore. I was a little sad about that.
Yeah, I mean,
couldn't use him in the. I don't know. Yeah, it didn't really. Yeah, he was sort of lost, right? He wasn't like with the vampire counts. He wasn't with the Tomb Kings. He was like a lich that doesn't really. Yeah.
I kind of know what you mean. It happens through editions where you lose. You know, the transition from 5th to 6th was so enormous. We were worried. Like this was like, you know, the year 2000. Literally, like the Y2K thing. We thought that was going to happen for this edition, 6th edition. It was so jarring. Like, mm-hmm. what are they doing to all these profiles? Now your lords can't take any monster they want anymore. And you know, it was definitely an adjustment period.
Yeah, yeah. I think my favorite Vampire Counts book of them all.
It's wicked.
I mean, you know, 5th edition Undead. Totally formative. I spent eons looking at all the fluff, right? 6th edition, it's like, okay, I'm like super into the fluff now. All the, you know, really fleshed it out.
Yeah. Yeah. They had a good writer, like Alessio's a good writer fluff wise as well. So,
yeah.
He did a lot for Mordheim.
I think I've played 6th edition Vampire Counts a bit, but like 7th edition, I don't think I played it very much. I don't know, maybe a couple.
What, 7th?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to move on to 7th, guys?
Let's move on to 7th.
There's some funny things here, and you know, I think all three of us probably played 7th the least. Is that right?
That would be right in my case for sure.
For sure, yeah. Me too.
Yeah, and a lot of that wasn't that at the time I was just like, oh, I don't like 7th. It was just I didn't have people to play with. Right, whereas yeah. I did in 5th and 6th and 8th, and 8th to a smaller degree, but 5th and 6th mostly. So if I had to sum up the 7th edition vampires in a single word, it would be ugly.
Right.
Because it seemed, and I mean this both in terms of the army book and the models. I did not like what they did to vampires in this. Do you see they did to Vlad?
Yeah.
Do you see what they did to my boy?
Yeah, yeah.
They slaughtered my boy.
Yeah. Right, so you got the evolution, the fluff, you know, character development that is annoying, you know.
Yeah, and not even so much like his backstory didn't really get altered that much. It's just I liked, and again, this is maybe it's my giant nostalgia goggles that I refuse to take off at any point, but I really liked the kind of suave Vlad. Yeah. Like I believe that, you know, because the idea of him as a vampire lord was that he could and did pass as human for decades and decades, as well
in
as
the lore.
He had human followers, right? Like he was, as far as vampires go, he was one of the best of the bunch, right? Like he at least gave him the option, you know, serve me in life or serve me in death.
He did. Right. He was the best. Yeah.
That's part of the vampire, like all the like the lore is that you're immortal. You're the same age. If you've got a drink of blood into you,
yeah,
you're good to go, and you look great, right?
Yeah, and it's just like it. to me, everyone started to look like a Necrarch in 7th edition.
Oh, you're right. When they now, all got, Manfred makes sense because if you read his lore, he was, you know, he basically in a swamp, you know, he kind of, I like the model on the mount, Manfred. I can get behind that, but you and I had this conversation, Nathan, about Vlad. Like, what did they do? You know,
yeah.
Where's the classic Vlad? And they, and you know, when you buy that model now, I think it just says Vampire Lord on the AOL.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, so Manfred was in Hell. Who was in Hellfen? Vlad or Manfred?
That was Manfred. That was his last the last battle before he died. Before he was
right
eventually so resurrected.
What happened to Vlad?
So Vlad was killed in the siege of Altdorf. Basically, the Empire figured out that his ring was the reason why he kept coming back every time they killed him. And so they, exactly. Yeah.
And they hired a thief, a brave enough thief.
Yeah. So he was fighting on the ramparts of Altdorf with the Grand Theogonist. And the Grand Theogonist actually sacrificed himself and basically dove over the edge holding on to Vlad. And they both got impaled on a big, big spike.
Yeah. I mean, I know the story, but why does he look gross? Like Manfred.
There was no reason.
There was
a reason for Manfred because he did kind of follow the path of the Necrarch vampire.
He was quite the scholar as far as like dark magic and stuff. Right. So I can see it a little bit more for Manfred, although I did really like his 6th edition model. I thought it looked really, really good.
I love that model.
Isn't it pronounced Manfred?
Oh, yeah, you know what it is? Yeah, I think Manfred. It's one of those Games Workshop ones where I think I read it and mispronounced it as a kid and I'm still doing it, but it's definitely Manfred. Yeah.
Okay. Just thought I'd check that there.
Yeah, no.
My buddy used to call Zinch Zentek.
Well, you were calling Mortem.
Mortem. Mortem.
Zinch for me, I as a kid, I didn't know not to pronounce the T, so I said Tzinch all the time.
But we have the corpse card introduced and the Blood Knights.
We get the Blood Knights, so the Blood Knights will definitely just cover in passing here because they're an important unit, because if you wanted to do, and it's kind of a shame that we lost Bloodlines in 7th edition because they were the perfect, you know, accompaniment to a blood dragon vampire. But I suppose that's where they, you know, if you wanted to do blood dragons, that was kind of their out for you there. But let's cover, because vampires changed again in this edition from 6th. So we lost the Thrall. The Thrall is gone at this point. And honestly, I shouldn't say we lost the Thrall, because we more lost the vampire count. Because we here have a vampire lord and a vampire. So the vampire basically replaces the Thrall. And they have very similar stats between the 6th edition Thrall and the 7th edition vampire. So the vampire, let me just see here. You know what? They actually have the exact same stat line. So the vampire thrall was the vampire basically at this point. So we lost the vampire lord from 6th edition and replaced it with the vampire count from 6th edition. And hopefully I'm not being too confusing here, but basically the vampire lord stats were lowered to that of the count.
Yeah.
And it's the exact same stat profile as the vampire count from 6th. So movement 6, weapon skill 7, ballistic skill 5, strength 5, tough 5, 3 wounds, initiative 7, 4 attacks, and leadership 9. So definitely a nerf for vampires if you just wanted to take the most expensive beastly killing machine you could.
I'm just laughing at how bad this book is.
it's not a good book. It really... So that Vampire Lord clocked in at 205 points in 7th edition, which is exact cost of the Vampire count in 6th. So they really just kind of phoned it in there. He's a level 2 wizard. One of the big differences is his magic items and his vampiric powers are now separate when you're spending points. So you can have 100 points of vampiric powers and up to 100 points of magic items.
Yep.
And so our vampiric powers, oh man. So our vampiric powers, we had different kind of schools of vampiric powers instead of the bloodlines now. So gone are all of the great families and that kind of thing. So vampiric powers, the first kind of school was the severed. So these are hermit-like vampires. So you could have some Strigoi stuff with powers like the Ghoulkin that gave ghouls in the army, accompanying ghouls in the army, a march move before the game begins. So kind of interesting. Supernatural horror. The vampire is real ugly, so he causes terror. And spectral form, which is an interesting one, which makes the vampire ethereal, but not as good as you think because he can't join non-ethereal units and he can't be mounted or take any magical items. But 50 points, you know, you could do some shenanigans with that for sure.
I like how they do vampires without bloodlines, to be honest.
Oh, see, I can't get behind it.
The reason is uh-huh. I understand. Now, there's a thing here, though, where if you didn't see the problems of the other ones, this gives you the option to create your own, which I like.
This is, there's no kind of limitations by you know, bloodline in this one. So you're probably able to make something that is a little bit more maybe customizable if you had something special in mind.
In which I love for game purposes, but I'm with you where it takes away from the whole lore.
Yeah. And this might be the difference where you played them and I didn't. So yeah, I'm looking at this as someone who's just like, oh, you know, this supports the lore. This is really cool. I'm in love with this. Whereas for someone actually making a list and actually taking it to the battlefield, I could see why having everything being open to you would be a kind of a
right. I played six. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Jesse.
Oh, right. You can cross over all the different houses.
Mm-hmm.
If you want. Yeah, which why I like that is that you end up having stuff that's not useless a lot of the time. You get used to, you know, the problem is making all these powers that you would want to use. And to be honest, most of these powers are pretty darn good. But I played 6th edition Vampire Counts the most out of any of the, what is there, four books? Yeah, four books.
Yeah.
And I got pretty tired of, it got pretty old pretty fast. A lot of the bloodlines.
Okay.
So I don't think I would like this style unless I played 6 so much.
Right.
This gave me freedom because I know in my head what each bloodline has and does, and I know all the fluff. So having that in my head carrying over into this style was fine for me because I knew what I was kind of the background and stuff. And who's to say that a Strigoi couldn't have, you know, the powers of Red Fury kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. And maybe it represents something different to the Strigoi, right? So
exactly, yeah. You know, that's right.
You could certainly make it work from a fluff perspective pretty easily.
And this is the same way that 8th edition does their powers, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Although I found 8th is a bit more consistent with the power that you're taking is usually it's going to work for what you want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So, we'll just cover kind of the bases here. So, so the first one was the severed. The second one was the arcane. So this is where you'll find some of the kind of the necroarch themed stuff. So Master of the Black Arts is still there. It's 50 points. This time the vampire generates an additional 2 power dice for itself in each of its own magic phases. Still sounds pretty good to me. Dark Acolyte for 30 points. Vampire gets an additional magic level. I believe Dark Acolyte's the only way to bring a vampire to magic level 4 in 7th edition.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's a good one.
It's worth mentioning in 7th, the magic phase was you couldn't share dice, which I really hate.
Oh,
like
yes.
Your wizards couldn't share any dice. They
yeah,
had to
everyone
cast their
had
own.
To. Yeah, everyone was selfish. That was right. Thank you for reminding
fine,
me of that.
But it's also boring, in my opinion.
So then, so after the arcane, we get into the bestial. And so this is where we get some of the kind of older stuff, like bat form becomes flying horror. So the vampire has the fly special rule. Infinite hatred for 25 points is a good one. Vampire hates everything and rerolls to hit in every round of close combat. Always one of kind of my favorite ones. And Hunter in the Dark gave the vampire the scout special rule for 25 points. So some kind of neat stuff in
we
there.
We need to talk about Hunter in the Dark
pretty
quick, because this is how I played my Strigoi. Hunter in the Dark, and then you give him terror. So you have scout. Mm-hmm. You cross your fingers to go first. You move the vampire to within 6 inches of a bunch of units that are not immune to terror. And when they start their turn, their very first turn, they have to test.
Oh.
It was so fun.
I bet.
That was incredibly fun to see up to three units like run off the table before. And you'd try to pick, if you could, like maybe those nasty war machines or even those units that are deployed close enough that if they fail and they roll 2d6 to flee, they go off the table.
Yes. Yeah.
Nasty, nasty business.
Nice. That sounds, that sounds like some shenanigans. I like it. So beyond that, we have the Marshal. So this is where we'll find kind of the old blood dragon stuff, including our very first entry, Red Fury. And so a little different this time, 50 points for each unsaved wound that the vampire causes, it gets to immediately make an additional attack. These additional attacks don't themselves create additional attacks. And the Red Fury cannot be combined with a great weapon, which is interesting. I think this is probably a better Red Fury than we've seen so far. Because I think the Red Fury was giving us plus one attack. I think you're probably going to get more than that on average, depending on your opponent, of course. But if you're just, if you're mulching through infantry, it seems like a good one for me. Yeah.
That's very cinematic, actually, that ability. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One that's interesting for 20 points, Avatar of Death basically just outfits your vampire. So the vampire wears heavy armor and is armed with either a great weapon, hand weapon, and shield, or two hand weapons. So just gives you some stuff, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Yeah. And
here's your starting equipment in D&D.
Yeah, yeah. And in case you wanted to go with the Cavalier starting equipment, that's the one just after it for Dread Knight at 25 points. The vampire has a lance, heavy armor, a shield, and rides a barded nightmare. So two kind of odd powers there that just kind of equip you. Yeah,
those are kind of funny. I don't like that. It's like, here's the powers gifted from, I don't know, thanks, man.
Here's the powers gifted from a yard sale that you went to last week. Like
I just got this from a Bretonian.
Yeah. So then we get into the courtly. So this is kind of more of your Karstein, Lamian type of thing. So Aura of Dark Majesty, all enemy units within 6 inches of one or more vampires with the Aura of Dark Majesty suffer a -1 penalty to their leadership, cumulative with any other modifiers. Leadership penalty is always great.
Yep.
50 points though, so you're paying for that for sure. So then we had Walking Death, which is our classic combat resolution, just a straight +1 bonus, so useful. And the old Beguile from the Lamians at 25 points. And this is that leadership test. The vampire, what is chosen model? Okay, is this just in a challenge? Sorry, I just have to read this.
Nope.
No, this isn't in a challenge.
Close combat phase.
Yeah,
after challenges, yeah.
Yeah, so the vampire may reroll to wound against the chosen model unless the target passes the leadership test with a -3 modifier. So at least they put a modifier on it this time.
I like
to make it passable.
Because you also don't have to be, the target is not immune to it, no matter what, if they're immune to psychology or not. So that's,
And so our last powers are the powers of the Master. And so this is kind of Necrarch-ish as well. So this is summoning for the most part. So we have Lord of the Dead, gives you a +1 roll when casting Invocation of Nehek. on Skeleton Warriors. And these are all like 15 points, so these are super cheap.
So you could increase the size of the...
So each one of them is kind of a plus one bonus to casting invocation for different ones. So we had Summon Creatures of the Nights, which was bats and bat swarms and fell bats, and Summon Ghouls, which was ghouls, of course. So those were all kind of interesting. Yeah, I read the sixth edition book and I look at this book and it just
feels
bland.
I think the one
bright spot for me out of this book, sorry, two bright spots would be, the first one would be the Isabella von Karstein that we got.
Yeah.
Was really good. And I don't understand why they couldn't have taken that kind of form with Vlad as well.
Right,
because she looks noble.
She looks awesome.
She looks powerful. And she looks like nobility, like that aristocracy of the night feel. She just drips off of her. And
I guess I remember, sorry, very quick, that Vlad was losing his powers at some point and did. I remember reading that he was, like, his powers were waning at some point and he couldn't hold his visage together, or he was just, either that or something, like he was kind of like, kind of in somber, like he was depressed. And he just didn't care. I seem to remember that. I can't remember where, but I mean, it still doesn't make sense. You'd want the model to match his wife, kind of thing.
It was always just, I liked that they matched in fifth edition. And I think he could have looked so good if they had used the same type of, like the same kind of sculpting language with him as they did with her.
So the Isabella, the one that Forge World eventually did?
No, the one that you have now.
Yes, yeah.
That's the same one. Resin.
That's not Forge World.
Okay, that's fine cast.
Yes, it's fine cast. It's worse than Forge World resin.
Right. See, I say something. Oh, right. We got the corpse cart. I love the corpse cart.
Oh, yeah.
The corpse cart was a fantastic model. Yeah.
I love the corpse cart, and I really love the Vargulf.
Yes, man, for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad, because I forgot about the Vargulf, but the Vargulf is also in the vampire family. So it's a vampire that has gone feral, which I think is super cool, right? Like, it's kind of maybe the end point of a Strigoi that just kind of really goes off the deep end. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I wasn't going to mention it at all. So the Vargulf was a 175-point monster. And it was a pretty good stat line. Movement 8, weapon skill 5, strength 5, tough 5, 4 wounds, 2 initiative, 5 attacks, leadership 4. Its special rules were undead, vampiric, terror. It had regenerate, which was great. It hated everything. And it had the bestial fury rule.
It was a rare choice.
And it was a nice addition to kind of the vampire mythos. And it's kind of, because we've always gotten a lot of like the von Karsteins, the vampires that kind of play at, you know, being human or human-ish, right? Like they still keep a lot of their human behaviors.
Yeah.
And it was a really cool idea to have, well, what if this vampire just doesn't care, like it just runs off into the woods and it's all like it just gives into the hunger, right, exactly. And so for my I don't know how good they were in game, but did like them from a
they're good.
They're solid,
you want to use them in support again, like a chariot kind of support flank, or see if you can get in there. They don't fly, was kind of their thing. They tattered wings, I guess.
And
Bestial Fury, was that
I've got it here actually. It was for the purpose of calculating combat resolution bonuses, a Vargulf counts as having no flanks or rear,
right?
And what's cool. Nice about it too is in its fluff verb here, it does talk about the Kingdom of Strigoi. And I talk about some of like the oldest Vargulfs are kind of vampires that once lived there. And I find it's a really, really cool edition. So the last thing I wanted to mention about 7th was the introduction of the Blood Knights. And so the Blood Knights, now for the longest time in Warhammer Fantasy, at least, you know, from fifth and sixth and a little bit through 7th here, the big bad of Shock Cavalry was Chosen Chaos Knights, or Chaos Knights, basically. Like, those were the ones that you feared. And then along came the Vampire Count 7th edition book, and oh boy, like, they kind of changed the super heavy cavalry game here. Because these were hero level. These were basically mounted vampire thralls in a unit.
They're insane.
They're absolutely, yeah.
The problem is, of course, they're so expensive. Mm-hmm. But they are insane. Like, 3 attacks a piece or more.
Like, just looking at their stats, they're basically toned down vampire thralls. So they're weapon skill 5, ballistic skill 3, strength 5, tough 4, 1 wound, initiative 4, 2 attacks, leadership 7. And of course their champion gets the bonus attack here. The Castellan, which is their unit leader, has to issue and accept challenges.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think they only get better in 8th, honestly.
But, yeah, frenzy.
Frenzy for the extra attack there. So, yeah.
But like, any one of them in 8th can challenge, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and even their steeds, they're not skeletal steeds; they're nightmares. So you're looking at strength 4 horses, which is really nice too. So they hit like nothing else for a little while before before we started getting monstrous cavalry like the skull crushers and those kind of things that just kind of really brought the pain.
And we got a whole bunch of new models, undead models. I'm just looking, man.
Yeah,
we got
there's a lot in here. So there was good that came out of this edition. There was good.
New skeletons, new ghouls, new dogs.
Yeah.
The knights, the graveguard, the Vargolf, all the characters. Corpse Cart.
We got a lot of change in the special characters, which we'll cover next time, but we do see Conrad making his return.
Oh, buddy. And funny. He's fun to play, and reading stories about him is really hilarious.
Yeah, he's I always liked his one bat short of a belfry special rule.
Yes.
Do you guys have anything else on this, or do you want to pop right on to 8th so we can finish this bad boy up?
Well, I do want to talk about a couple things here, because this is where 7th is. I might just blow your mind here, your guys' minds.
Okay, so I'm ready.
7th edition was the only edition where when you know how the undead rule works, when you break, how you break, you lose wounds based on the... Okay, so this is the only edition where you could actually take a ward save against those wounds.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or regeneration, if you could. Yeah, so it's... kind of crazy, but I mean, that's the way 7th kind of went with crazy powerful stuff, so I think they were trying to balance that out. So it says undead cannot be broken, but undead units beaten in combat suffer 1 wound for every point by which they lose combat. No armor saves are allowed against these wounds, period. That's it. So every 6th edition says no saves of any kind are allowed.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so you could take a ward save here or a regen save.
Right. Yeah, no, vampires got really strong in this edition, I think.
Yeah, for that, the whole undead army, like, you could cast a spell maybe that gave regeneration to somebody, or, you know, a ward save, or I can't remember which spells off the top of my head, but that's pretty huge. And I didn't find, I played 7th quite a bit, because I'll tell you about this little tournament. The first ever Halcon. Well, I guess Halcon was in the past, but the first, like, when they rebooted it, I wish I could remember his last name, Pat, I can't remember his last name. He TO'd the fantasy tournament. So I took my undead, this was the book at the time, and I took Vlad von Karstein. I said, why not? I'll take Vlad. Cool. We played, I think, 4 games, three to four games. And there was an award at the awards at the end, there was top winner, best painted, da da da. But they had a new one that I didn't hear of before called the Dice Don't Like Me Award. And I actually won that award because I failed all of Vlad's Resurrection Karstein ring saves.
Oh, no.
Which was a 2+. I failed 3 of them. So when he died, and the TO, Pat, came over, first time saw it happen. Second time, he asked me later, did you fail that? And I said, yeah, I failed it again. Third time he was there, he was kind of hovering around to see my die rolls that day. It was a tragic day for the undead.
Man, you know your tournament's going well when the tournament organizer is just hanging around to see how badly you're doing. That's rough.
He also had to check on people's bad rolling to award the ceremony. And I got, the award was like the original set of black orcs, the metal ones.
Oh, yes.
That's what it was, yeah.
Oh, that's something cool. Like that. I like those. Yeah, they're good. They rank up so much better than the new ones.
But other than that, that's pretty much it. What you said. Oh, the one thing too was this is the first edition where you could mix bloodlines. For example, 6th and 5th, you can't. If you chose Lamians, you can only take Lamians in your army list.
Yeah, that's worth pointing out. Because the bloodlines aren't really a thing
they're
anymore.
Not,
so you could take something that would have been a Necrarch in 6th edition with those powers and combine it with something, you know, another vampire that would have been a blood dragon. So yeah, that kind of flexibility would have been nice.
Flexibility was good. It was good for someone like me that played the crap out of the book, right? And mm-hmm. It also, because what I did in the past was I ended up splitting up. I remember asking, I was like, Devin, do you mind if I just, we're playing two 2,000 point game. Do you mind if I take 2 1,000 point vampire armies? Because I want to try, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
combining the lore. It was fun though. With 6, you could, why not, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But nice. Yeah, that's it for me on 7th.
Cool. All right. Well, let's quickly hop into 8th here. And we'll round out the first part of our discussion.
Cool.
So in 8th edition here, and so the 8th edition book doesn't give me the feel bads that the 7th edition one is, but we see some more changes to the vampire cover stat art. Line.
Cover art bugs me, man, on this book.
So this is the weird thing. So to me, this cover art, to me, it's the worst, maybe the worst, but at the same time, I feel like it's trying to appeal to the retro look.
Right? Yeah, see, I like it more than I like the 7th edition one.
I don't like 7th either. It's trying too hard to be mundane or something.
Right.
I don't
know. Yeah, it's not good either.
I think the 5th and then 6th and then 8th and then 7th are mine. For
6th
favorites.
5th edition and 6th for me, yeah. But what I find funny about the cover is this is probably the only book out of all the 8th edition books that what you see on the front does not represent what's in the book. You know what I mean? Like, it's very, like, all the other art is nothing like that. It's all gruesome and scary. And, like, look on page 15. Look at that vampire, like, rip apart that man's arm. Like, there's...
Oh, yeah.
That's not... And that's throughout the book. Like, it kind of has this goofy retro cover, and then inside is death and incarnate.
Yeah, but, no, that's a good point. It's, there's some... Yeah, this book does have some really good art in the...
Yeah, all the old stuff, but yeah, some new stuff, too.
New stuff. Yeah,
and we got a lot of new models again.
Man, those, I would say my favorite new models are the Vargeists. They're amazing.
They do they're kind of redundant with Vargeists though, right? Like, that's the same thing, but like a different kind of troop.
No, they're totally different.
Isn't there like a vampire this or right? No, the
Yeah, Vargeists fly. They have frenzy. They have vampiric rule. Vargolf is like, actually the Vargolf's
better, but he doesn't fly.
Better, but they're both kind of just like vampires that went nutso, got all mutated, right?
So yeah, I'm not sure the Vargulf story as much, but I know the Vargeist were underneath. They're like those vampires that quote unquote misbehaved, and their masters threw them, you know, bound them in chains and put them in coffins underneath the castle and never to be seen again. And
oh yes,
you know what I mean? Then they, like, all the magics and all the stuff that oozes through the earth eventually mutate them into these giant aberrations kind of thing.
All right, I like that. I'm into it.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure the Vargulf is, I think the Vargulf's a bit more special than that, where it was, but I'll have to look that up again.
Yeah, he's a vampire, like proper or whatever. Like,
right, yeah. These guys were like, they'll let them out when they feel like they've mutated enough, I guess. But those are probably my new favorite ones besides the, like, the Coven Throne took me a while. It took me a while to warm up to it because it's so, such a new, you know how everything started getting bigger?
Yes.
Yeah.
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 So we,
I love
we,
the model. Look at it.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. We got so many more vampire kind of related units in 8th edition. And
yeah,
it actually, it started in 7th, because of course we had the Blood Knights and the Vargulfs. But yeah, you look at this and you can see over the years how Games Workshop leaned more and more into the theme of vampires and vampires making up more than just, you know, your general, right?
Right, yeah, for sure.
So let's start off with the stats of our vampire, our classic vampire lord here. So so this one in this book, we get a vampire lord and we get a vampire. So this is very much a continuation of the 7th edition one. So
similar to 7th, yeah.
Yeah, so the only difference stat-wise on our vampire lord in 8th edition is that both he and the vampire, like the hero level vampire, get a bonus attack on their profile. So that's nice. They do go up slightly in points from 7th edition, but not huge. Mm-hmm. Yep. The big difference is, however, that we get the return of one particular bloodline of vampire, and that is the Strigoi, who get their own entry in the Strigoi Ghoul King.
It's so cool.
Yeah, so the Strigoi Ghoul King, he is a bit changed up. So he loses a point of weapon skill. So he's only weapon skill 6, at only weapon skill 6. Yeah. But he is initiative 8, so he gets a bonus point of initiative there, and he is -1 leadership. But he does some different things. He can take vampire powers like the other vampires, up to 100 points. Can be mounted on the new Terrorgeist.
Yes.
So the Terrorgeist shows up in this book, and it's really neat. I really like the Terrorgeist being a giant undead bat, like the end form of a you know, fell bat that got really, really big.
Right.
And I liked how they tied in its death shriek with the, like, the banshee howl, that kind of thing. I always thought it was a neat kind of alternative to the dragon.
And that kit was just fantastic.
That is, yeah. Oh, the Strigoi has poison attacks. That's awesome.
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you for mentioning that. I missed that.
Yeah, poison attacks, regeneration.
Poison attacks and regeneration.
Mm-hmm. Infinite hatred. That's pretty sweet. Yeah.
So, I should mention one big change here. So in previous editions, and we'll get more into this when we get into magic next time, but vampires used what was basically, it was the lore of vampires, and before that it was called necromancy.
Yeah.
And it's had a couple different names throughout the years, but so they always used their own special lore. In 8th edition, they suddenly got access to the lore of death and the lore of shadows.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, and it makes them far more versatile as well. So, because you can do some business, especially the lore of shadow.
Shadow's wicked,
It's a great, great lore.
It was also kind of essential to have against certain machines that are, you know, war machines or whatever. I do wish they kept it called it the lore of necromancy. I don't really care, you know, because the vampires are drawing from that necromantic energy. in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know that they needed to rename that, but I guess if you're making vampires the star of the show, you want to call it Lore of the Vampires, I guess, but
we'll
get into that next time. But so you've got these so you've got a couple options for vampire lords now with the Strigoi Ghoul King, which is really nice. Of course, you've got the your classic vampire thrall that just became the vampire, sitting at 105 points. And so both the lord and the regular vampire start off as wizards in 8th edition. They're both level 1, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. The hero level vampire can get to level 2. The lord level vampire can purchase his way all the way up to level 4. So again, it's one of those things where you can make what would have been a necrarch in previous editions, you can just kind of buy your way to that, you know, that mastery.
It's not cheap.
No. What I want to get to here is our vampire powers. Here it is.
Right.
And so, man, looking back at, you know, 5th edition, 6th edition, and looking at now this single page in 8th edition, man, how the mighty have fallen, right?
Yeah.
You took this wonderful, you know, customizable, build your own bloodsucker kind of rules. And now it's just, it's got this one page. It looks kind of sad, but we still get some good stuff in here. So it's not, you know, it's not terrible. It's just
it's knowing about lack where it of came using from. And lack of creativity, but also they paid attention to some of the, like a lot of the powers that were there were just not taken by people. You know, they never use them. It's not an excuse. They just need to write better, better writing.
Yeah. Yeah, so these ones, they no longer even have categories anymore. It's literally just a page of powers. You pay points for them. And so there's some good ones here, though. Specifically, Master of the Black Arts. Now, this is going to set you back 75 points. But honestly, I still think it's probably worth it if you're playing a larger game. And a player using a vampire with the Master of Black Arts power can reroll one die when he's determining the strength of the Winds of Magic. I would pay 75 points for that almost every game because there's
I ignored that for so long playing. And then I was like, well, let's just see what this, it was so huge, such a huge difference.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's going to depend on your play style. But with, you know, you with vampires in eighth where you have that choice between three lores, and more than that, if you take a necromancer as well, because necromancers can take spells from the lore of death as well as the lore of vampires. Yeah. So you can, you know, this is an army that can sling some magic and really throw its weight around. And I think, Master of the Black Arts. Oh boy.
Yeah.
What a thing. So there's Curse of the Revenant. So some of these names they've taken from older editions, which I like. So this is the vampire has plus one wound. So if you want to get your four wound vampires back, you're missing 6th and 5th edition. That's a big one at 55 points. Seems a little expensive. I think that could have been a 50 pointer. I don't know.
They did. It's another intentional rule. So it's so a hero can't take it.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that would do it. Yeah. We get the ever popular Red Fury. This time it's 50 points. And so this is just like the 7th edition one. So this is the extra attacks that you get for every success or every unsaved wound that the vampire causes. Mm-hmm. So still a good one. Flying Horror gives the Vampire the Fly special rule. So a lot of these we're going to see. Quick Blood for the Always Strikes First. So basically, this is almost like a highlight sheet of the stuff that was taken in you know, the popular powers from
like 5th edition. A lot of the names are from the original, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 6th and
we see things like Beguile makes a return there. It's only 15 points in this one, which I like.
Can I tell you my favorite one?
Yeah, go for it.
You guys, Forbidden Lore.
Forbidden Lore. Okay, so this is a 25-point upgrade. The vampire can generate his spells from any one of the lores in the Warhammer rulebook except the Lore of Life. Oh, boy.
So I choose Lore of Beasts most of the time. And a vampire thrall at level 1, you know, if you roll on beasts and you the one I'm looking for is the signature spell anyway. It's +1/+1 on a unit.
Right.
It's crazy. Like, imagine your Graveguard are now strength 5, tough 5.
I do not want to imagine
Yeah, it's just, I've tried it. It's really cool. And I didn't even play with many of the other lores. Just, I was like, oh, I'm going to have, and it was kind of like, it's really fluffy in that way where you can kind of imagine that vampire studying, maybe it's a, you know, maybe so, it was a human that lived in the woods all his life or like, that became vampire. Now he's just like attuned to the lore of beasts or something. It's kind of, it would hold it to even in the undeath. I like that
idea. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the powers, so the powers kind of do read like a highlight list of the older powers that were popular. It is certainly a far cry from what we've seen in the past, but an effective list, if not a huge one. Because on this page, there's 15 powers here. You know, there's some really, really good stuff, but lacking a little bit of that flavor. But you honestly, they seem to, in 8th edition, add a lot of the bloodline feel back into the army through army units. So things like the Blood Knights, which are very obviously Blood Dragons. You had the Strigoi Ghoul Kings. And in this one, you also had, which we had mentioned a little bit earlier, the Coven Throne.
Coven Throne's great.
And what a centerpiece model this thing is, too. It's really something. Yeah. So Jesse, you are you're currently getting a Coven Throne built and painted. Do you have any strong opinions on it as a unit?
I've never used it.
Okay, well, that makes sense, actually, because, now you're just building and painting it, so.
And I faced the Coven Throne not as such in 9th, and it was pretty fierce. Like, you know, I faced it in, actually, I faced it in 8th, and with the
you
Lord
shot
on
mine
top.
To death.
I squared in on the Lord on top with a Screaming Skull Catapult.
Oh.
One-shotted my Lord on the turn 2.
Ouch.
It's been a blast paint, and some, like, the kit is really nice. The vampires are just so so delicate, and the faces are I've never used it, but it's pretty, you know, it's a chariot. It's like D6, is it what, D6 impact, I guess.
D6 impact plus, I mean, this thing throws out a kind of a tremendous number of attacks, or it has the potential to.
The ghosts, the handmaidens, the lord on top,
So after taking out my general, the Coven Throne charged into Jesse's tomb guard at some point or whatever, and it lasted the entire game.
Wow.
Lucky I got the flank, but still, it was... Jesse had it down, almost dead, and then my magic, I kept healing one wound per turn on it. So I had the range. That was such a good game.
That's all for this week. Join us next Wednesday for part 2 of our look at vampires, focusing on the famous blood-sucking lords and ladies that grace our tabletops and the dread magics they can unleash. You can find us on Facebook at the Warhammer Orchard if you'd like to say hello, have a comment, suggestion, or question. If you liked the podcast, consider subscribing. And if you really liked it, consider leaving us a 5-star review. This lets the algorithm gods know that we are worthy to be shown to others. Thank you so much for listening and spending some time exploring the Warhammer world with us. Bye for now. When the darkness falls, our time is at hand. We are the rulers of the night. We are the predators of the shadows. Come hither, and we will show you the true meaning of terror.